We went on long hikes and forced marches through the jungles, swamps, and over endless steep hills. We made countless practice landings from Higgins boats on small islets off the coast. Each morning after chow, we marched out of camp, equipped with rifles, cartridge belts, 2 canteens of water, combat pack, helmet, and K-rations. Our usual pace was a rapid route step for 50 minutes with a 10-minute rest. But the officers and NCOs always hurried us and frequently deleted the 10-minute rest. When trucks drove along the road, we moved onto the sides, as columns of infantry have done since early times. The trucks frequently carried army troops, and we barked and yapped like dogs and kidded them about being dog faces. During one of these encounters, a soldier hanging out of a truck just ahead of me shouted, "Hey, soldier, you look tired and hot, soldier. Why don't you make the army issue you a truck like me?" I grinned and yelled, "Go to hell." His buddy grabbed him by the shoulder and yelled, "Stop calling that guy soldier. He's a Marine. Can't you see his emblem? He's not in the army. Don't insult him." "Thanks," I yelled. That was my first encounter with men who had no esprit. We might grumble to each other about our officers or the chow or the Marine Corps in general, but it was rather like grumbling about one's own family, always with another member. If an outsider tried to get into the discussion, a fight resulted. One night during exercises in defense against enemy infiltration, some of the boys located the bivouac of Big Red and the other instructors, who were supposed to be the infiltrators, and stole their boondockers. When the time came for their offense to commence, they threw a few concussion grenades around and yelled like Japanese, but didn't slip out and capture any of us. When the officers realized what had happened, they reamed out the instructors for being too sure of themselves. The instructors had a big fire built in a ravine. We sat around it, drank coffee, ate K-rations, and sang some songs. It didn't seem like such a bad war so far. All of our training was in rifle tactics. We spent no time on heavy weapons, mortars and machine guns, because when we went up north, our unit commander would assign us where needed. That might not be in our specialties. As a result of the field exercises and obstacle course work, we reached a high level of physical fitness and endurance. During the last week of May, we learned that the 46th Replacement Battalion would go north in a few days. We packed our gear and boarded the USS General Howes on 28 May 1944. This ship was quite different from the President Polk. It was much newer and apparently had been constructed as a troop ship. It was freshly painted throughout and spick and span. With only about a dozen other men, I was assigned to a small, well-ventilated compartment on the main deck, a far cry from the cavernous, stinking hole I bunked in on the Polk. The General Howes had a library from which troop passengers could get books and magazines. We also received our first Adabrin tablets. These small, bitter, bright yellow pills prevented malaria. We took one a day. On 2 June, the General Howes approached the Russell Islands and moved into an inlet bordered by large groves of coconut palms. The symmetrical groves and clear water were beautiful. From the ship, we could see coral-covered roadways and groups of pyramidal tents among the coconut palms. This was Pavuvu, home of the 1st Marine Division. We learned we would debark the next morning, so we spent our time hanging over the rail, talking to a few Marines on the pier. Their friendliness and unassuming manners struck me. Although clad neatly in khakis or dungarees, they appeared hollow-eyed and tired. They made no attempt to impress us, green replacements, yet they were members of an elite division known to nearly everybody back home because of its conquest of Guadalcanal and more recent campaign at Cape Gloucester on New Britain. They had left Gloucester about 1 May. Thus, they had been on Pavuvu about a month. Many of us slept little during the night. We checked and rechecked our gear, making sure everything was squared away. The weather was hot, much more so than at New Caledonia. I went out on deck and slept in the open air. With a mandolin and an old violin, two of our Marines struck up some of the finest mountain music I'd ever heard. They played and sang folk songs and ballads most of the night. We thought it was mighty wonderful music.